EFTM.
Tech, cars, lifestyle. This is the EFTM podcast with Trevor Long.
EFTM.
G'day, g'day. Welcome to the show. Great to have your company and great to be with you in your earphones, your car radio, your home stereo. I don't know where we are. I'd love to know. So feel free to post on Instagram story, a little photo of you listening to the podcast, a screenshot of your phone or a photo of the car stereo, whatever it is. If you tag me at TrevorLongAU on Instagram, I will definitely reshare it. My God, if you post a story on Instagram, I'll reshare it for you. Absolutely. Always keen to see where people are listening. Let's have a little bit of a podcast push on socials and let people know what we're listening to and where. I'm curious to know. Now, I can feel myself already stumbling. And I don't know, maybe you can't tell, but I certainly can. My voice is so different. And you have to be a Two Blokes Talking Tech deep listener into the private feed to understand what I'm talking about. But I'm wearing dentures, okay? I have a fake tooth on a plate because I had a tooth ripped out and an implant put in less than a week ago. And I had no idea how hard it would be to talk with this bloody thing in my mouth. Now, I can take it out, but let's be real. I've got to get used to it. 6 months of this before they put a fake tooth in. So, yeah, thanks. That's why I sound like a weirdo on some words. You know what? It's funny. It gets really dry, the plate. And anyone that wears a plate will probably know this. I just didn't know. And I've never had this, but I'm hydrating a lot to solve that. But I did a video yesterday reviewing wireless microphones, Rode, JBL, Joby, DJI. I need to say that one slowly. DJI I struggled saying it with this bloody thing in my mouth. But anyway, we'll leave that aside and I'll get used to it and hopefully it improves. Bunch of calls to get you this week. Plus, we're going to talk scam awareness with Amazon, something we should be talking about more regularly, and I have no problem doing that. Great to see so many calls on the line ready to go, and a new way of getting in touch as well. I mentioned this to Stephen, and I haven't told him yet because I will use it for the EV podcast. But I just thought in this day and age, maybe you're listening and you're walking or whatever, maybe it's easy just to send a text. So you can now send a text message or a WhatsApp message to 0477-657-657. 0477-657-657, and they'll come straight to us, and we'll be able to get you on the show. So happy to help. You can still go to efgm.com and click Ask Trev. That'll work just as effectively, but it's probably easier for you to just send a simple question. Doesn't have to be long-winded, just what do you want to talk about, to 0477-657-657. Happy to help where I can on your tech questions. And a big shout-out and thank you to Rob Rigby, who is now officially the producer of this show, because I created this thing and then went, I'm now overwhelmed by how complicated it is for me to find all these people, plus chase people who want to be on the show. So Rob is now chasing people for me, and I appreciate that, mate. It actually has already made today so much easier. So shout out to Rob, who's jumped in as it's official, Rob, you're the producer of the show. You can get a credit on the title. I don't know where. You can just tell your mum, right? She'll be proud. EFTM.com, click on Ask Trev or 0477-657-657. I'll get used to saying it. And we appreciate you listening and downloading. And yeah, send me a photo. Snap a photo, share it on Instagram. Share a story on Instagram. See, that's the hard word to say. Instagram. I need to speak slower and therefore it's easier. Share a story on Instagram and tag at TrevorLongAU. And we'll get you on the show. And with that, we're underway. Trevor Long taking your calls. If you've got a tech question, you've got a tech problem, you can very simply go to EFTM.com and click Ask Trev, or you can send an SMS or WhatsApp to 0477-657-657, 0477-657-657. Craig's on the line. G'day, Craig.
G'day, Trevor. How are you?
Really good, mate. What can I do for you?
So we travel internationally probably at least once a year.
Nice. And
in the past, we've always kept our old iPhones So when we get to a travel destination, we go to a kiosk and buy a SIM card and whack it in and off we go.
Yep.
But with the emergence of the eSIMs, I wondered whether that was a more practical way to go. But just not too sure about the practicalities or, how it all works.
What sort of places do you go? Do you go anywhere in the world? Is no real obvious limitation to the way you travel? You like to experience different places, or is it just Europe or America? What do you got?
Well, in 6 weeks, just remember you asked this question. In 6 weeks, we'll be hitting Thailand first. We're there for 5 days, and then we're off to the UK for 2 weeks.
Wow.
And then on the way back, we're going to the States for 2 weeks.
Mate, can I come? Sounds pretty enticing. What about you, Mr. Travel?
Well, look, my wife suffers from severe jet lag, and I've sort of convinced her that the way to get over that is to travel with the international clock.
I like it.
So when we come in from the north or the northwest, she gets real crook.
Right.
And she can be out of action for anywhere up to 2 or 3 or 4 weeks.
And so if you go literally around the world and follow it along, like I flew to Europe through Jakarta and where was the other one? Jakarta and somewhere else recently. God, I've already forgotten. Anyway, and the thing I liked about it was the stop down. And I thought to myself, you know what? If I ever get my family to Europe, I don't think I'll fly direct. I think I'll probably stop for a day or two in a, you know, whether it's Jakarta or Dubai or somewhere, just so that we can really pace it out. But it's the smarts that you've got is you're going around, so you come back and the flight on the way back is easy to manage because it's an overnight flight, right?
Correct. And it just so happens that the country music festival's on in Nashville at the time we come back, so that was a bonus.
Bloody hell. You are living the life, Craig.
If we come back from London, we used to stop at Singapore for anywhere from 2, 3, 4 days.
Yeah.
Because we're coming in from the north or the northwest, she'd still get crook. Yep. And it would take her, as I said, 2, 3, or 4 weeks to get over it. So,
yeah, right. That's fascinating. Well, I mean, you've nailed the plan. So then the great news is that as long as you've got eSIM-enabled phones, it is so much easier. Now, the other thing I'd say to you is the advice I'm about to give you comes from someone who – I don't want to say I don't care about money. I absolutely do. But when I'm traveling, I don't go, oh, I mean, this thing's $30. I could probably find it for $20. I'm like, come on, it's $10. I can make this. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not that picky on trying to find the best deal. So the best approach.
It's got to be practical. 100%. It's got to work.
Well, mate, you're about to have your mind blown because the best thing is an app called Airalo, A-I-R-A-L-O, A-I-R-A-L-O. So the phone that I'm actually using to talk to you on is the phone I use for Channel 9. It's my Dejero phone. It's the phone we make all the TikToks on when we're in CES, and it's the phone that travels the world with me. It's got I've got a permanent eSIM from America in it, so I pay $50 a month for an AT&T SIM card. So whenever I'm in America, I just enable that, right? So that's because I go to America, you know, 6, 7, 8 times a year, right? That's seemed to me to be the smartest thing to do. But when I go to Europe or, random country like Thailand, in your case, this Airalo simply lets you go, right. So I'm looking at it now. I click on Thailand and then it brings me up some plans. And, you know, you've got a 50 gigabyte, 100 minutes, 10 days, $10. Unlimited data, unlimited calls, 15 days, $20. So you basically get these little packages. And, you know, they're not going to work everywhere, but obviously when you go to the UK, you're pretty sorted because I think most SIMs work across Europe if you were to go anywhere else. But basically, if I click on the UK, there's the biggest plan is $36 for 20 gigabytes of data for a month. So basically you just find a plan that suits you. And it's all in the app. You click a button, you say buy now, and then it just embeds the SIM into the phone and it works. You're up and running.
Does it give you a phone number? For example, as we're booking accommodation and tours along the way before we get to these countries, they always ask for a contact phone number.
That's a great point. Look, I can't be 100% on that, but the great thing is where are you spending the most time, did you say?
Well, 2 weeks in the UK, 2 weeks in the US.
Well then, you got to be careful. You don't want to activate it early, but if you go to the UK one now, you could probably do a little bit of a test. The cheapest one is $5, right, for 7 days. You could probably do a test today, throw $7 against the wall because it's US money, so it's going to be, you know, under 10 bucks, and buy one now, and you'll know. Like, you'll know straight away. But my concern there is if you buy it beforehand and then it expires and you renew it again, do you get a different number? So I am a bit nervous about that part of it. What I would say to them is, like, are there other ways you can contact us? So I would always say to them, like, sure, you can use my number for WhatsApp or for Skype or whatever, but you can't use my number for a physical phone call. And, mate, let's be real. Mate, you just put your Australian number down. The hotel's never going to call you. You touch base with them the week before to confirm. So you do all the outreach to them to make sure everything's okay, and you'll be fine.
If I've got two phones, can I still call the other phone via data? So by using WhatsApp or FaceTime, for example.
As long as it's got, so with WhatsApp, you realize that with WhatsApp, if you've got an Australian phone number and then you land and you put a new SIM card, and you can actually opt to keep your Australian number operating on WhatsApp. So you don't actually need to change your number on WhatsApp. FaceTime is just a data connection. Same thing. Just uses your iCloud email address or your Australian phone number.
Excellent. So I can put eSIM in my phone and eSIM my wife's phone, and I can still call her.
Yep. Using FaceTime. Exactly. Exactly.
Excellent. Awesome.
Mate, you're on a winner. I think, look, it's going to be one of those, a little bit of touch and go as you test it out, but you're definitely going to be fine with that app. Such an easy way to go. So you sort it on the ground when you touch down, you're ready to connect.
Excellent. All right. Well, I've got it in front of me, so I'll start signing up now.
All right. Good on you, mate. Have a great trip. We're all jealous of you. I think everyone listening is going, wow, that's a great trip. So you're a lucky man. Well done. Enjoy.
As people keep telling me, and the older I get, the more I hear it, there's no ATMs in a cemetery.
No, I like it. I like it a lot. Yeah, I'll tell my kids that as well.
All right, buddy. Thanks. Cheers, Craig. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much. Good on you. And if you, like Craig, want to have a chat about something technology, want some advice, you're looking to buy something, doesn't matter what it is, EFTM.com, click Ask Trev, or new and fresh to the show, you can send an SMS to 0477 657 657, 0477 657 657, and just let us know what you want to talk about.
This is the EFTM podcast.
EFTM. We'll keep taking your calls as we get through the show. David's on the line. G'day, David.
Good morning, Trevor. How are you, mate?
Yeah, really good, mate. What can I do for you?
I have a question, and I thought I was pretty much articulate on top of things myself, but I thought I'd come to the man in the know in relation to backup of your computer and your data.
Yep. What sort of things have you got on it?
I'm a podcaster like yourself, as well as an actor, so I've got lots of videos and audio, and I've got all my family photos, all the precious stuff. So it's actually probably close to a terabyte of data of stuff that I back up now. Wow, so okay. Pretty important data. Now, I've always been on top of one of the biggest things I heard was people have a separate hard drive and back up their data to that. So if they lose their computer, they've got it on a separate hard drive. But the problem is they've always kept that in the drawer next to their computer. If the house burns down, you've lost everything anyway.
100%. Yeah, definitely.
So I've used an old hard drive, which I upload, and I take it to work and leave it at work, and then I bring it back occasionally and re-back it up. So that was one. But my primary method was online with a company in America called Carbonite.
Yep.
So that would just back up my data automatically on
all
the computer.
All terabyte
as soon
of it?
Yeah. Right. Just and when it's happening upwards, it's fine because obviously it takes a bit when you first set it up, but then it just trickles it. So if I add photos and that, it just uploads and it's there.
Yep.
But I just found out the problem with this is that I've just bought a new computer and went to I thought, this is great. I'll just set up the new computer, upload the Carbonite program to the new laptop, and then download my data. It was going to take weeks because it doesn't go. It's, you know, it was taking like 5 minutes, between 2 to 5 minutes for just an individual photo. I was watching it because even though I've got great internet, obviously you're dealing with Australia to the US and then their servers and everything like that. Yeah, so it wasn't practical for a full download. Now, they do have options where they'll send you DVDs of your data and you can upload like that.
I think you've stumbled upon the problem with the cloud is that we don't live – the technologists would call it the edge. We don't live on the edge. The edge is the place closest to the fastest parts of the internet. And that's where you that's where a lot of computing is moving. But your computer lives at home, and getting to the edge is a slow process, and then getting past the edge to the cloud is a different thing. So you're right. Actually, restoring from the cloud is a horrible way to do computing backups. I look at the cloud as much a backup as just another way of accessing my data. So, like, you know, my Google Photos, I see that as just that's where my photos live. And when I need them, I look at them there and I grab them one by one. I would never need to download all of my Google Photos. Whereas you're kind of operating essentially in this shared space. So you do, I think, need to live locally still. You kind of need to live more in the, you know, the old school was two backups and, you know, cycle them through 1 week on this 1 week drive number A, next week drive B. And you keep drive B at the mother-in-law's house, and then you go and swap it over every time you come for lunch. And, you know, you're basically just keeping a week or two old data backup off-site as well as one on-site.
Yes, yes. Because I like to own my data too. I mean, I love the cloud is a great system for everything, and that's the way we're going. And it's great that, where's that photo that I wanted? And you can find it. That's good because it's hard to connect to your computer at home. But I still like to own my data and know that it's on a hard drive somewhere that I own it.
I think people skimp on the investment in storage. So if you're buying a standard hard drive for backup purposes, you're mad because those spinning disks can fail. Now, this is going to sound like an outrageous expense, but I just spent, I think, $1,200, no, maybe $1,000, on two, I think they're only 1 terabyte, I can't see one near me, but 1 terabyte Samsung X5 solid-state drives. Now, these are stupidly fast. And you know what it means? I can plug this into a modern computer, a Thunderbolt connection, maybe a Mac in my case, obviously, and the data transfer is like, it's just the normal internal hard drive. And so I can operate off that. And so that's where I put all of my video. So when we film the podcast here in the studio, I can dump all the footage onto that drive and then take it home. And on a laptop, I can download it. I can actually edit from that drive. I don't even need to copy it off that drive. So
because the computers are so fast now.
Yes. Yeah. So you can actually look at actually, do I utilize fast external storage as my my internal work process, or most importantly, do I just invest in some small, solid-state and easily accessible drives that are at least a little bit faster to transfer data on, much more reliable and robust, and, you know, you're rarely going to have these problems of data transfer. So it feels to me like you've learned essentially through this process that you really don't need the cloud for what you're doing. You need to come local again.
Again, because I do have I've got a SanDisk portable solid state drive, which is new, which is 2 terabytes that a cameraman was using for some footage. So I could probably just switch to the same process I had with the backup to that one here and take one to work, and there you go. And I've saved myself $100 a year with Carbonite.
Yeah, and look, the last thing I'd say is if you reach a limit, a capacity. I tried it with my father-in-law, but he has a very structured system about how he backs things up. But anyway. I would say that, like, I have a folder called Current Projects, and that lives on a NAS, like a network storage here in the office. And so I kind of moved from the portable drive, and after a few weeks or something, I don't know when I'm going to need that again. And so you could have active and non-active drives. So you might have a drive that's 1 terabyte, solid state, and you dump, you know, the non-active stuff on there, previous projects, previous things that you might need to access but not regularly. And one sits at home, one sits at work or wherever. And then you have an active set as well that potentially are smaller or, you know, the latest versions or whatever. But you don't need to get a 5 terabyte solid state drive. You just operate in a bubble of 1 terabyte at a time. Try and think of it that way.
What you're doing.
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful. That's awesome. Right. And one of the biggest reasons I wanted to talk to you about it is because there's so many people don't do this backup. And as I've said to you, I'm on top of it. And I think you need to, because you lose those family photos. You're just going to be heartbroken.
Well, and look, that's why for the things that matter most, I'm covered. My emails and my contacts and my photos live in the cloud. I put a lot of stuff in Dropbox, you know, so if I needed a document or something, it's probably there. If the office burns down, I've lost a lot of footage, but it's not really footage I'm going to cry over. So
you've got the backups there that you need. Oh, beautiful. You know, well, I'll stick to
when I filmed the video of a phone 3 years ago, am I really ever going to look back at that? Probably not. It's here because I've got the space. It's not in the cloud because I don't need to keep it.
Fair enough.
That kind of thing.
Love it.
Good luck, mate.
That answers my question.
Yeah, well, brilliant. Go old school. That's what it sounds like.
Old school, but with new technology.
That's it. I love it. Well done. Good on you, mate.
Love your work, Trevor. Thank you. Love the show.
Cheers, mate. I appreciate it. It's a fascinating thing because I often don't think about the backing up of a computer because I live in the world of backing up individual pieces of data. You know, my contacts and my emails are in the cloud. My photos are in the cloud. And therefore, I have no physical backup of them anywhere. Obviously, you're screaming at your phone or radio going, well, hang on a minute, but what if your cloud service goes bust? Well, look, when Google stops doing cloud, we've got a bigger problem in the world. And yes, I'm at their behest in terms of cost, but there are cloud-to-cloud transfer services. I wouldn't recommend doing it regularly, but I did move terabytes of data from Dropbox to Google and back different directions using a cloud migration service. And because it's kind of on the edge, it's a little bit faster, but it also happens in the background. It's just happening in the cloud. So you don't have to be beholden to one cloud, but I do think you need to pick your horse and run with it. That's just my feelings. All right, get in touch. 0477-657-657 is the number. Welcome to the EFTM podcast. If you've got a tech question, you can just text 0477-657-657. We'll get you on the show and help you out. Whatever you're considering buying, selling, or you've got a problem with something, happy to help wherever we can. Now, long-time listeners will know this is far from the first time I've talked about this, and it will absolutely not be the last because it's an issue we have to keep talking about, not just me to you, but you to your family and friends as well, because it should be dinner party conversation. It should be catching up with your mum or your grandparent or whoever it might be, just little subtle conversations about scams can make all the difference because really education is one of the most important factors in this. Now, I thought to talk about this, we grab on the line Amazon Australia's public policy manager, Julia Stewart, to talk about scams and scam prevention. Julia, great to talk to you.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Now, I mean, Amazon is a big part of this because people, so many scammers pretend to be you. You're the forefront of so many people's shopping experience. So you kind of have to play an active role in this space, don't you?
Absolutely. We find that a lot of scammers take advantage of our brand and the trust that our customers have in us and use our brand in ways that mean that they suffer loss. And so anything that we can do to try and help our customers is something that we're committed to trying to help with.
Because the numbers are still staggering. It is in the billions, the money being lost in Australia alone. And so this is the conversation we need to be able to have. And I think arming people with those stats about the amount of money being lost to scams is a big part of making people realise this is not a little problem.
Oh, absolutely. You know, scams aren't new, but the problem is increasing. 2023 data from the National Anti-Scam Centre shows that Aussies lost $3.1 billion to scams last year, 80% more than the year before. So in your introduction, when you talk about the more that we can talk about it, I think you're exactly right. It is a big problem, but hopefully by talking about it, by getting people thinking about ways to avoid being scammed, we can try and sort of fix the problem.
Because the responsibility in the end is on the end user. We can create systems and processes as much as we like, but scammers are also, and I did a podcast series with Nine Radio called Anatomy of a Scam, and we talked about this in great detail. Scammers are, they're businesses. They're not just little nerds in basements. They're often corporations with legal teams, creative teams, engineering teams, technical teams who are working out how to scam people. So we need to look at them as being essentially professional outfits trying to dud us. And so the education part of it is critical. I think one of the things that people often think is that, oh, no, the bank is going to stop that from happening, or Amazon won't let someone use my account or whatever it is. Is that the challenge you find, that people believe that the problem is being solved for them?
That's right. So we often find that, and a lot of the time those scams as well happen outside of our stores. So we need customers, really. We try and help people as much as we can, and we try and provide as much education as we can and work with our customers to try and find a solution. But there are also some really, you know, simple things that people themselves can do to try and stop scams from happening as well.
So what are the key bits of advice for people that you give, whether it's at the dinner party or at a keynote speech, I guess? you get both ends of the stick, don't you?
That's right. I am that person talking about scams at dinner parties. And look, I mean, I do get told a lot of stories because I think people are scared to talk about it as well. So I'm really happy to talk about it. But I think from my perspective, the biggest number one, there's two key things, I guess, and you've probably spoken to this about your listeners, but one thing is if you are ever concerned about, you know, if you get a phone call or a text message or even an email claiming to be from Amazon, the best thing that your listeners can always do is don't respond. If you're worried, you can just hang up. Always go back to your Amazon account. So log into your Amazon account or use our mobile app if you've got the app, and you can confirm your messages and also any purchases that you've made in that app. So always your Amazon account is always the source of truth. So if you've ever got any concerns, always just go back to that. And I think one other big thing is, and you've probably talked about this before, be wary of false urgency. A lot of the time scammers take advantage. You know, you might be picking up the kids or, you know, doing your groceries and you get this call and you're probably not concentrating, or you don't need to respond then and there. You can always just hang up or don't answer. And when you've got that time, go back and check. And other things are like, you know, and with that, never pay over the phone, for example. Mm. Just take that moment. You can hang up, you can come back to it, and you can deal with it later. So I think they're probably my two key messages is, we are always the source of truth at your account, and also don't get rushed into doing something. Don't feel pressured into doing something. Hang up, don't respond, and when you've got the time that you're really concentrating, you can deal with it then.
And that applies across the industry. If it's Microsoft, Telstra, whatever the scammer is jumping on this time, Netflix is another good one. You know, if you log on to your Netflix account and your payment technique is actually expired, you'll get that information there. You don't have to do anything over the phone. And I think the stop, it's like the pause and think, you know, it's a, hang on a minute, I'm about to make a Bitcoin transfer. Wow, this is the first time I've ever done Bitcoin. Why would I be doing this? Think twice. You know, it really is that urgency problem that gets people. And look, the other part of this for me, Julia, I don't know if you believe and experience this as well, but there's this stigma around being a scam victim. I don't, but like people get mugged in the street and they're happy to be on the news and talk about their story. But you get scammed out of $1,000 or $10,000 or $100,000 and you hide in the corner and won't tell anyone. Unfortunately, it happened. It's sad. I don't know if you're going to get your money back, but the best thing you can do is tell people. Because if you tell people the things that happened to you or the scam call that you got today, then you're actually probably helping them more than you are making them look upon you in any negative way.
Oh, I could not agree more. And it's really interesting. As someone who spends a lot of time working on scams, I find it quite interesting. People will come and tell me their stories once I've said I've worked on them. And it's amazing. You know, so many people know someone. And I think there is that element of shame, and it shouldn't be that. People should talk about it. A lot of scammers are really sophisticated. They're using all kinds of technologies these days. So really don't feel afraid to talk about it. And even we would love it as a business. It's great for us if customers report it. We have special lines that people can use and special email address. Tell us about it as well, because the more you tell people, the more we can see patterns and we can take action to try and stop it from happening to someone else.
That's a great place to end on, because I think the reporting, so it's not just about telling your family, but telling ScamWatch, like ScamWatch, the anti-scam center, they can't help with a scam if they don't know about it. And if they get 100 people on one day telling them about a new thing they'd never heard of, they can be on high alert. They may even get it on the news about it, you know? Plus, you've got a system, amazon.com.au/report-a-scam, where you can literally report scams that are happening to you on your website. And my information is, my understanding is that the efforts that you're making, the strategies that you've put in place, actually you think are helping to see a decrease in your customers falling victim to scams.
That's right. So we actually see, despite that increase that's happening Australia-wide, we actually saw last year a decrease in scams by 15%. So the more that our customers can report to us, the more that your listeners can talk about it and let us know, we can take action to try and stop scammers from happening.
Great advice. A tough gig to be working in scams every day. You must hear some horrible things and you must laugh at some things you hear too, because some of the scams are hilarious to me, especially the ones that ring me and I want to have some fun with them and then they hang up because, I don't know, they must have detected. They must have worked out that I was not a normal victim. So it's an interesting space that you're in. I'm glad that we've got a bit more government support on this with the Anti-Scam Centre, and I'm pleased that you're doing so much in this space as well. So, Julia, we appreciate your time, and it's an open invitation to be here talking about scams anytime, because I don't think there's an amount you can talk about scams that's a bad thing. So thank you for the efforts that you're doing.
No, thank you, and thanks to your listeners as well. I think the more we can talk about it, the better off we'll all be.
Appreciate your time. Have a great day.
Cheers.
EFTM.
This is the EFTM Podcast.
EFTM Podcast.
Fascinating stuff talking scams there with Amazon. If you've got a tech question or you want to talk about scams or you've been affected by a scam, I'm absolutely happy to hear about it and talk about it, because it will educate more people as we talk about it. You can get in touch via SMS or WhatsApp 0477 657 657, 0477 657 657, WhatsApp or SMS, or the old traditional way, EFTM.com, and click on Ask Trev. Reg is on the line. G'day, Reg.
Oh, g'day. Trevor, how are you?
Yeah, really good, mate. What can I do for you?
Trevor, I'm travelling overseas very shortly, mm-hmm. and when I've been overseas, I've usually had a Android tablet and with Wi-Fi, and I've usually been able to connect to things and do things overseas.
Yep.
Not, I don't do banking, so it's just browsing and applications,
yep.
et cetera.
Yep.
And I was looking at a new one and then popped up about a Chromebook, and I don't know anything about Chromebooks and what their capabilities are or anything like that. So I just sort of thought, should I get a tablet or a Chromebook?
Well, I think it's a great question, because like they do make great devices, Google, with the Chromebooks. And by the way, so a Chromebook, let's keep it real simple. Chromebook's a laptop, okay? But it's a laptop that's not running Apple's Mac, and it's also not running Windows. It's running Google Chrome. So do you use Google Chrome? Have you got a computer as well at home, or you just use the tablet at home?
Oh, no, I've got a computer at home.
Do you use the Chrome browser or a different browser?
I usually use Firefox or okay. Edge.
So think about this as being a computer that is built with just Firefox and nothing else. But in this case, it's Google Chrome. Because what they've done is they've built so many applications into Google Chrome. You have word processing, spreadsheets, you can use kind of photo editing, and all this kind of thing can be done on the web. Anything you can do in a web browser, you can do on a Chromebook. And the advantage to them, there's two advantages, I think, for you, Reg, that I would call out. First one is price. They're often pretty affordable because they're aimed a lot at school kids. So, you know, there's Chromebooks for like $300 and $400. There's also some at, you know, $800, $900 and more. They are also a physical laptop. So you've got yourself a proper physical keyboard. So if what you do when you're traveling is a little bit of typing and corresponding or, you know, searching, and you prefer a physical keyboard built into a laptop than a keyboard that's attached to a tablet, then a Chromebook would be unbelievable. But if you're cool with a tablet and the way a keyboard can attach to a tablet and all those things, then there's really no advantage to having a Chromebook.
Right, yeah, because I normally the old tablet I had a case with an inbuilt Bluetooth keyboard, yep. which I could detach.
And you can get those for pretty much any tablet now. The one thing I'd say is when you've got the tablet, what apps do you reckon you're using overseas?
Well, the thing is, I probably have a mapping application, mm-hmm. hotel booking sites,
yep.
You know, airline apps for yep. notifications, etc. So there's three that come off the top of my head.
I think the only thing to think about then that will make the decision for you is when you're in a city and you grab a coffee and you're sitting at the park across the road just enjoying the sunlight or whatever it is, are you going to use this device there? To get the map to your next destination, or are you using it when you're in the hotel room and those kind of places?
Probably in the hotel room.
Then a laptop's fine. A Chromebook would be fine. But if you think you're ever going to need that map on the street, then a Chromebook would be awkward, you know, because you've got to open up this thing and it's like opening up a laptop, whereas a tablet is much easier to carry around in a portable sense. Right. If it's just for the hotels, then a Chromebook might be great. But also remember this, Reg, you know the tablet. So you've used the tablet, you know how it works, you're used to it. That may be the familiarity that makes you realise that a tablet's all you need.
Okay.
I've basically not answered your question, have I?
Oh, no, it's good. I'm interested in, because neither of the, does the Chromebook have USB ports and an Ethernet port? Or?
Some might have an Ethernet port, but USB ports definitely.
Okay. So, and of course, with the tablet, I've got to sort of have an on-the-go adapter for a USB port to put pictures on and things like that. So it's a bit
You might even find a Chromebook with an SD slot card slot, so you can actually just put the card straight in.
Oh, well, that's an interesting thing. Yeah,
there's a lot of them out there.
There's no tablets with that sort of facility.
There hasn't been one for a while that would take a full, certainly with, not with a full size SD card. So
right, okay,
yeah, that's probably a really good angle towards a Chromebook. And there's so many on the market that you could be overwhelmed with choice. So be wary.
Okay. I think it might come down to, I am, like you said, familiar with the tablet, with Android and all that stuff, and the physical size and weight is going to come into it.
Yeah.
And I don't need a huge screen. I don't need a 15-inch Chromebook.
I reckon go to the shop and grab a Chromebook and put it in your hand and walk around with it for 10 minutes. And see if that puts you off. If it does, then go straight back to the tablet, get yourself a nice shiny new one.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a good idea. You might go down to the, one of those big retailers and have a look.
Check it out. Good on you, Reg. Thanks for getting in touch.
Okay. Well, thanks, Trevor.
No worries at all. Good on you, Reg. Enjoy the trip. And, hopefully it's a great one. And the tablet, I reckon it'll end up with a tablet. Let's be real. I think we can all feel the... We lean. I could see myself wavering back and forth there, but I think we ended on tablet in reality. Good on you, Reg. Thanks for getting in touch. You can get in touch as well. Just send me a WhatsApp, 0477 657 657, or an SMS, the same number, 0477 657 657. EFTM.
You're listening to the EFTM podcast.
EFTM. Thank you for listening. Wonderful to have your company. Always happy to help if you've got a tech question, tech problem, buying advice, you want to brag about something you bought. I'll be jealous, but no more jealous than Craig earlier on, who's traveling around the world, and it's like the world's longest trip. He's having a great time. Anyway, whatever you want to have a chat about, happy for you to get in touch. Derek's on the line. G'day, Derek.
G'day, Trevor.
What can I do you for, mate?
Trevor, I've had a bit of a problem with Apple.
Yep.
They closed down my Apple account. Which I didn't really get notification of. Look, they may have sent it to me, but I don't really have many Apple products.
Right.
And I guess I kind of took exception to them closing it down without, you know, I guess contacting me properly. Yeah. And
how long had it been since you've used it?
Well, I guess the interesting question is, so part of the reason I had that was two reasons. One, because I purchased music through iTunes.
Yep.
And the other was that both my kids, when they were in primary school, needed iPads. So I used it to monitor them. So how long since I've used it? It's an excellent question. Probably a couple of years.
Mm.
So I get why they shut it down, but I guess I kind of took exception to the fact that, you know, I did, and I actually checked. I think there was about 95 songs that I'd purchased on iTunes. I guess I was just I did my best to find out why, and they didn't really give me an adequate response. They just kept on saying, we'll just look to the term and conditions.
Yeah, right. So I'm fascinated most by the fact that you bought music and you don't have that anymore.
Yeah, so that's not to say that I don't have a copy of it. Okay. I do have a NAS at home.
Yeah. Does it still work without an Apple ID? I guess they got rid of.
Yeah, so I downloaded offline copies of the music back in the day because I used Plex to actually push my music around my house and all that sort of stuff. So, so I don't necessarily need the music. It was more just, you know, I guess if other people in my situation that don't have a lot of Apple devices but purchase music, that if they don't have that offline version of it, then they would lose that music forever.
How did you find out that it had been deleted?
I actually tried to so I used to use iTunes to rip CDs.
Yep.
Because I'm a little bit old school. I don't mind an old school CD and like having an offline copy because, in fact, this actually confirms it.
I don't like
leaving my trust in things like Apple to keep music for me where I've got an offline CD that, you know, if I ever want to redo it because I lost something, I can just rip it again.
Yeah, right.
So I installed iTunes to rip a CD and then tried to log into my account. It wouldn't let me do it. And then I went through the process of doing an online login and it said, you know, your account's inactive and all this sort of stuff. And then I've contacted Apple 2 times and spent about 2 hours on the phone with their people, both here and in the States. They actually elevated it to the States.
Yeah.
But both times I've essentially said, we're not reactivating your account and we won't tell you why.
What if they reactivated your account, what would you see? What would you do? How would it change your current situation?
It's not really going to change my situation much because, like I say, I do have an offline copy of that music. Mm. And look, I don't have an Apple iPhone. I do still have 3 iPads floating around because the kids needed it for school. And one of them I was given as a present by my boss about 10 years ago, which is another reason I don't like Apple. They deactivated that one when I made a mistake once setting it up. Anyway, that's a different story for a different day.
It's not a story of, oh my God, I've got this thing I need back. It's more a story of, did anyone else realize that this is a thing and this is a problem if you're inactive
exactly,
or whatever?
Yeah,
it
was more just a cautionary tale of, you know, Apple sells you the idea of, hey, we'll hold your music forever. However, if you're not a dedicated Apple product user, they could deactivate your account and you could lose all of the music that you've stored up over the years.
Because I've had the account for over 10 years, perspective, I guess. I've had an Apple ID for a long, long time. I ingested a lot of music, which I put into the Apple Cloud because I don't know if it's still a thing, Music Match or whatever it was called, $35 a year I was paying, so that the music that I took off CDs and put into the cloud, Apple makes available to me via streaming at any point on any device, right? Plus, I've bought a lot of songs. Plus, I've bought a lot of apps. And so I'm wondering, right, ignore the fact that I use a lot of Mac products or anything. I'm using a Samsung phone right now. I've still got an Apple ID. Maybe I'm not using Apple Music. So I'm not signed in or anything, but I'm still, you know, an active individual. But then in what many years does my access end? So if I go back to iPhone in 5 years, will all my music and apps be there? So
that's essentially my question.
That's
and my
what I
point.
Want to find
you
out.
You know, more than the loss, I'm not really losing anything because I'm not really inside the Apple ecosystem.
Yeah.
I'm a Samsung and Android typically type of guy.
Yep.
So I'm not really losing something. Yes, as you say, it's more of a cautionary tale that you think that you may own it forever, but if Apple decides that your account's inactive, and I don't know if they weren't able to contact me or whatever it is because, you know, even though my email address hasn't changed, I've got a Hotmail account that I opened, you know, when I was 17 or 18, you know, 30-something years ago.
Mm.
So it's not like I've changed email addresses or anything like that. So I don't know why they were unable to contact me. Maybe it's in my junk mail. I don't know.
So last question, because I do want to follow up on it, not to get your resolution, but just for my own understanding. Do you have, other than obviously the Apple ID, and you don't have to give it to me now, we'll get it off air, but are there case numbers or any support numbers or anything you've been able to collect through those phone calls and things? Great. Well, look.
There's two of those I'd be able to put together.
I want to get a hold of those things, so we'll reach out and get all those details from you because, look, I just want to ask the question. And, look, Apple's a very closed shop company. I'm not sure they'll give me a very clear answer, but I just want to know. And the question I'll pose to them is if I use a Samsung phone for 5 years and never touch an Apple product and then I switch back to iPhone, will all my apps be there and my music? If not, if yes, how many years until they're not, et cetera, et cetera? Kind of want to work that out.
Yeah. Yes. And I just kind of wanted, because I guess the responses I got from them seemed rather guarded and that they didn't want to tell me, because I thought maybe the possibility is that yes, they deleted my account, but they did it 3 years ago and they've got no more backups, you know, but they wouldn't even tell me that, you know, it was just, we've deactivated the account, we're not reactivating it, and that's the end of the story.
All right, leave it with us. Let's see if we can find out. Thanks, Derek.
Appreciate your time, Trevor. Thank you very much.
No worries at all, mate. Good on you. Thanks for getting in touch.
Thank you.
Cheers. Kind of fascinating. I'm a foot in each camp in terms of, you know, how long do you keep something when it's inactive? But what's the responsibility to keep it because there's owned assets within it? I think most of us would be outraged that the owned assets are no longer available. So that's what we'll find out. We'll ask the question at the very least. EFTM podcast, Trevor Long taking your calls. If you've got a tech question, you know what to do. Just go to EFTM.com, click Ask Trev, or you can send a WhatsApp or text message to 0477-657-657. Dan's on the line. G'day, Dan.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
Yeah, really good. What can I do for you?
So I want to know, can I still buy a proper 5.1 or 7.2 surround sound system and not have to worry about a stupid soundbar because I don't like soundbars?
They're not as easy to get as they used to be, that's for sure.
That's why I thought I'd ask you because I've been looking.
I think the challenge is you now end up in a much more expensive space. So there are systems, no doubt. I think the company that I would be looking at is Addicted to Audio. This is like, obviously they sell your soundbars and Bluetooth speakers and all that kind of stuff, but they sell the absolute top end of everything. They sell $12,000 headphones. They sell, you know, amps or DACs for computers, for people that are audiophiles, and they sell systems, you know, proper turntables.
But they sell a proper 5.1, do they?
Mate, they'll sell you an 11.4 if you want one. Like they'll...
Now you're talking.
They've got it all.
Sorry, I needed a private moment there.
Yeah. Well, mate, make sure you lock the door when you're on their website. It's addictedtoaudio.com.au. It's wild. Like, you could drop 100,000 just browsing that website, right? So if I just look at their, I'm just on their website just browsing the hi-fi section, right? They've got a thing they call the Champagne Supernova Floor Standing Speaker Bundle, right? Now, this thing is like a $40,000 amp and speaker bundle from Cambridge. You know Cambridge, the brand in the UK? Like,
I do, yes.
Unbelievable sound quality, right? So it really just depends what you want to look for, how much you want to spend, but they are definitely the people to go to for proper. Like, these are the guys that you buy the cables from because, you know, cables matter in a proper system, all this kind of stuff.
I do. I do. I actually have a follow-up question if it's okay.
Yeah, hit me.
So I've been running an LG, I mean, it's an old surround system now, but I've always been told that optical can carry 5.1.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to matter. It doesn't seem to be the case.
How do you test that? What are you putting through it?
Okay, so if I throw a DVD on through the old Blu-ray player, I get my 5.1 beautiful. Mm-hmm. I get my speakers next to me going off like, you know, Tinkerbell. But then when I'm just watching Netflix or something, no 5.1.
Well, I don't think
I know it's not the cable because I changed the cable.
Optical definitely. Let's be real clear. Optical,
yes.
An optical cable definitely supports 5.1.
Okay.
Like I know that because my last stereo system, which is now 23 years ago, I thought it was amazing that I could rig up a Blu-ray with an optical into the stereo and listen to the whoosh of the DTS thing come up at the start of a concert DVD. Right. So we know it's there, and it's a clear format. Capability. HDMI supports more because of the more recent features. But it sounds to me like, is the Netflix built into your TV?
Into the TV, but I've got the optical out running through the TV.
But is the TV 5.1?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. I've got this stupidly big LG thing.
It's a configuration thing in either the Netflix app or the sound configuration of the optical output.
No, I've looked at that too. Playing games on the PlayStation still won't do it. It only works. I'm actually thinking it's my old LG sound system.
Yeah, so it's a link in the chain. Your problem is working out which link.
Yeah, and that's where I'm thinking it's a sound system, hence the original question.
Yeah, right, okay. And, I mean, answering that question for yourself is going to cost you some money. But you sound like the sort of person that's going to absolutely appreciate it. And I think, mate, it would be a great experience. I think that – where are you based? Where do you broadly live?
Tasmania now.
So your problem is they're definitely – I think they're only – yeah, Sydney, Melbourne, Perth, Adelaide, Auckland. So to physically go in and look at something is going to be harder with Addicted to Audio. Mm. But like I've met some – I had one of these guys come to the Today Show set and set up a system once, and he was just such an audiophile. It was kind of overwhelming to talk to him because it was way above my pay grade and knowledge. But I feel like they're the sort of people that – like they've got a phone number on their website, and that says to me that they're – their website is called Addicted to Audio. That's their business. They sell high-end audio, and they've got a phone number on their website. I'd be amazed if you didn't get someone with knowledge on the other end of that phone to then give you some advice on which you know few things might narrow it down for you in terms of systems to buy.
I might have to give these guys a call.
Basically, what we're saying here is JB and Harvey's not going to help you. You need to go somewhere special.
Absolutely. I found that one out the hard way.
Yeah, exactly. So, you mate, I think you'll end up with something amazing.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Trevor.
Good on you, mate. Thanks for getting in touch, Dan.
Thanks, mate. Cheers, mate.
Good on you, bye. No worries. Yeah, I mean, it's wild. You have a look at this website, right? Addicted to Audio. Just do it for fun, right? And here you go. Go hi-fi and then go floor-standing speakers, right? And then go price descending. Ha! This is gold. The most expensive floor standing speaker that they have listed on their website is the Magico M9 carbon fiber loudspeaker. Now, ladies and gentlemen, $1.5 million. Yeah, I'm not even lying. I assume that's only one of them. Do you need two? Imagine that. I mean, you can spend $80,000 on a speaker. You could spend 60, you can spend 30, you can spend 10. It's wild. It really is. So I think Dan's going to have a really fun time on that website. And I hope they look after him. They're great people. Addictedtoaudio.com.au is the website I was sending him to.
This is the EFTM podcast.
EFTM. All right, that's another show in the can. Thank you for your help. Thank you for your support. Great. Thank you for listening. And I look forward to seeing your Instagram posts of where you're listening. At Trevor Long AU, tag me there. We'll reshare them. I got Instagram suddenly just started working on the Samsung phone the other day. My login wasn't working, and then suddenly it just worked. Very weird. Anyway, probably been hacked. Never know. We'll see, find out. Love to see your posts. At Trevor Long AU. And, 0477-657-657, folks. Remember that. Save it in your phone as my name. I don't care. You can't call it. You can only text or WhatsApp it. And I'm happy to receive your messages, whatever they are. I can delete them if they're awful. So that's no problem. 0477-657-657. Talk to you next week on the EFTM podcast.
EFTM.
This is the EFTM podcast.
EFTM podcast.